If we want praise for progeny, we must give birth to our own.
Alan Yentob reflects on her life and career.
Well, I was thinking about boys and sex and love more than anybody else, and I was sort of rather careful not to show that.
Imagine, this Tuesday night at 10:35 on BBC One.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, and on digital radio and also online. It's just gone 1 o'clock. Time for the news from Ian Skelly.
Britain and Russia have agreed to rebuild ties which have been strained in recent years by allegations of spying and the murder of a former Russian agent. Meeting at the G8 summit, David Cameron and the Russian President Dmitry Medvedev said they were determined to make relations more productive. But the Prime Minister made clear that there were still points of disagreement, particularly the death of the agent Alexander Litvinenko, who was poisoned in a London restaurant in 2006. His murder led to diplomatic expulsions by both countries. The Armed Forces Minister, Nick Harvey, has insisted that David Cameron has not set a timetable for withdrawing British forces from Afghanistan. Mr. Cameron said he would like to see the troops leave Afghanistan by 2015. Last night, he held brief talks with President Obama about Afghanistan at the G8 summit. Downing Street said both men saw the issue the same way. The government is to impose a temporary limit on the number of foreign workers allowed to come into Britain from outside the European Union. A permanent cap is to be imposed next year, but ministers want a stopgap to prevent a last-minute rush of migrants. Business leaders are worried that a strict limit will damage the economy, while the Labour Party has called the policy a gimmick. Japan's fisheries minister has said it's unfortunate that no agreement was reached on the future of whaling at the latest annual meeting of the International Whaling Commission. In a draft deal drawn up by the commission, Japan would have to stop using science as a cover for whaling and would instead be given an annual fishing quota, along with the other whaling nations, Iceland and Norway. Japan said it would keep talking to the IWC but could not agree to end Antarctic whaling when it was not justified by science. And the weather forecast, many places will be dry and warm with sunny intervals. Northern Ireland and parts of Scotland are likely to see scattered heavy showers, and occasional showers are also forecast for Northern England later. The highest temperatures today will be 26 degrees Celsius in London and 22 in Cardiff. And that's the BBC News and the weather. It's nearly 3 minutes past one.
And now the Saturday edition of the Early Music Show, introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
Thank you. Six Fughettos for Organ, the Opus 1 by Carl Maria von Weber, both composed and recorded there in the city of Salzburg, which is the focus for today's early music show. Weber wrote them when he was just 11 years old and on a visit to Salzburg with his father's theatre troupe. While he was in town, he took some lessons from the great Michael Haydn, and those little organ pieces were the first fruits of his instruction. Weber and his father didn't stay long in Salzburg, but there are lots of musicians who made their homes there through the ages and became an integral part of the city's musical life, not least a certain Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, without whom, I think it's safe to say, Salzburg's thriving tourist industry wouldn't be what it is today. The city itself is the fourth largest in modern-day Austria and sits neatly on the banks of the river Salzach, on the northern boundary of the Alps. The name Salzburg, literally Salt Castle, comes from the salt mines in the area that helped to start the regeneration of the city in the 7th century. It was a holy man, St. Rupert, who saw its potential. Now considered to be the founder of modern-day Salzburg, he based himself in what was the ruined Roman settlement there. 100 or so years later, barges carrying salt along the river were subject to a toll, and as a result, the city began to flourish. St. Rupert was also the founder of Christianity in the region, and the cathedral, which was begun during his lifetime, now bears both his name and his relics, although, of course, there's been quite a lot of building and rebuilding over the 1300 or so years since his demise. The cathedral and its surroundings naturally attracted all sorts of people, including craftsmen, artists and musicians. And one of the earliest composers in the area that we know of was Heinrich Finck. He produced huge amounts of music during his 70 years, and he's probably best known today for his popular songs and folksy instrumental settings, like this one, Greiner Zanner, Bawling and Scolding. Forget your school days. This is how a recorder consort should sound.
Thank you.
two different settings of the popular folk song Guarina Zana. Bawling and scolding are performed there by the recorder ensemble Il Curioso, the first by the 15th century composer Heinrich Finck and the second by Paul Hofheimer, who for a short time was Finck's second in command at Salzburg Cathedral. When Finck left Salzburg to go and live in Vienna, Hofheimer stepped into his shoes and remained as the organist until his death. He was evidently something special, a spectacular improviser. People were amazed at his energy, how he'd go on playing for hours and hours, never repeating himself, as one contemporary put it. One wonders not so much how the ocean gets all the water with which to feed the rivers, but how this man gets the ideas for all his melodies. Florian Pagic with a piece by Paul Hofheimer, performed on the organ of the Toren Filial Church in Salzburg. And Hofheimer's influence as an organist and teacher lasted for several generations after his death. Such was his reputation. As an important part of the Holy Roman Empire, Salzburg soon became a major focal point for Catholics. Religious zeal was one of the driving forces in Europe in the late medieval period, but the city remained loyal to the Vatican and to the Habsburgs, fiercely fighting off any Lutheran influences from the north. It was now a thriving metropolis full of aristocrats, high-up church dignitaries and fabulous buildings. And to work in them, to serve the city's great and good, it drew in some of the very best composers, including Johann Stadelmeier, an immediate successor to Hofheimer, who was employed by the Bishop of Salzburg. Enormously talented, Stadelmeier soon rose to become Kapellmeister, but after just 4 years, he moved on to work for the Tyrolean Archduke Maximilian II. We don't know what the Archbishop felt about his musical director being poached, but it seems there were few hard feelings. Indeed, Stadelmeier's career went from strength to strength. He became well known all over Europe and continued performing his music in Salzburg too, throughout the 17th century. This next piece is by him, an introit for the festival of Easter.
Thank you.
Andrew Parrott conducting the New York Collegium in that Resurrexi by Johann Stadelmeier, who was active in Salzburg Cathedral in the early 17th century. Our next Salzburg composer was one of Stadelmeier's favourite pupils, Abraham Mägeler. He was a deeply religious man, a member of the priesthood, and also Kapellmeister at the cathedral for some 11 years. In fact, so devout was Mägeler that he instructed that all his music, and there was quite a lot of it, should remain in the exclusive service of the Counter-Reformation. Then, and we don't quite know why, he suddenly resigned from his duties at the cathedral and spent the last 30 years of his life as chaplain in a tiny Bavarian town where he died completely penniless. Perhaps he felt he'd simply been enjoying himself too much. Anyway, that better not worry us, because we're going to enjoy a really magical little duet he wrote for two sopranos, Peccator et Consolator. It's incredibly atmospheric. Just imagine it wafting around Salzburg Cathedral, the voices echoing each other higher and higher like celestial beings. If you are disturbed by the enormity of your guilt, if you are afraid of the horror of judgment or swallowed by the abyss of despair, think of Mary, call upon Mary. And finally, the two voices join together in the stratosphere. What is sweeter or more lovely in the ear of the sinner than you, O Mary? If the winds of temptation arise, if you suffer the doubts of tribulation, look up to the star, call upon Mary. A duet for two sopranos by Abraham Megeler. Susan Hemington-Jones and Ruth Holton with organist Timothy Roberts and Paula Chateauneuf on the theorbo. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping. And today we're looking at music written in the Austrian city of Salzburg, which right up until the early 19th century was an independent state within the Holy Roman Empire. Arguably the most famous musical Salzburger, until Mozart, of course, was Heinrich Bieber. Originally from the small Bohemian town of Wartenberg, he became one of the most dazzling violin virtuosos of his day. His solos, wrote Charles Burney, are the most difficult of any I've seen. Like many professional musicians, Bieber was employed by a series of well-to-do nobles, but he finally saw an opportunity to move his career up a notch when, in the summer of 1670, his employer sent him across to a town near Innsbruck to negotiate the purchase of some new instruments. He never arrived, instead taking a detour to Salzburg, where he entered the service of the Prince Archbishop. Luckily, his previous employer decided not to take any action against him, and Bieber remained in Salzburg for the rest of his life, where his enormous talent was given free rein. He climbed steadily through the Kapellmeister ranks until, in 1690, he was raised to nobility by the emperor. And finally, the new Archbishop of Salzburg appointed him Lord High Steward, no less, a fantastic social accolade for a musician. Most people who know Bieber today think of his violin music, especially his wonderful so-called mystery sonatas. But of course, with his life revolving around Salzburg's magnificent cathedral, Bieber also wrote a huge amount of church music, the most important of which perhaps is his Salzburg Mass. Actually, until recently, there's been a question about who wrote it. Now, though, most agree it's Bieber's own work, and that he almost certainly composed it for the 1100th anniversary celebrations of the founding of the Archbishopric of Salzburg. In other words, a tribute to our old friend and city founder, St. Rupert. It's wonderfully grand and colourful music and full of the sort of references that would have been instantly recognised by the crowds of townsfolk who crammed into the cathedral for the occasion. They certainly would have enjoyed the sort of alpine horn effects blasted out by the trumpets from high up in the galleries. This is the dramatic opening Kyrie.
Thank you.
The Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra and Choir, conducted by Tom Koopman, with the opening Kyrie from the Salzburg Mass by Heinrich Bieber. So Bieber had now become something of a big cheese in late 17th century Salzburg, a musician of fame and stature. In 1678, he was joined at the cathedral by another musician, Georg Muffet, who was a year or so younger than him. Now, even though he was somewhat in the shadow of the mighty Bieber, Muffet really began to flourish as a composer. And after about 4 years, the Archbishop granted him leave to visit Italy to study in Rome with one of the city's most acclaimed composers, Pasquini. Muffet used his time wisely, studying Italian music and networking with the likes of Corelli, whose groundbreaking Concerti Grossi had an enormous influence on him. The result was five sonatas. And to show just how indebted he was to the great Italian, Muffet called the collection Armonico Tributo, in honour, as he put it, of the many useful observations touching his style most graciously communicated to me.
Thank you.
Sonata No. 4 by Georg Muffat, played there by the Parley of Instruments. 5 years later, the Archbishop of Salzburg died, and although Bieber and Muffat continued to serve his successor, it seems Muffat felt unsettled by the new regime and eventually left the city. Well, we're moving firmly into the 18th century now, inching nearer towards Salzburg's most famous son. Leopold Mozart arrived in Salzburg in 1737 to study at the university there. Unfortunately, he was expelled for poor attendance. Not a good start, it must be said. But it did mean that he could follow his passion to become a professional musician. His first job was as a humble violinist come valet to one of the university's canons, but eventually he squeezed his way into the orchestra of the ruling Prince Archbishop, where his duties included teaching instruments to the cathedral choir boys. Although he was undoubtedly well respected, he never rose any higher than deputy Kapellmeister, which perhaps explains why the discovery of his own children's extraordinary talent was so important to him. We might call Leopold Mozart a pushy parent today. And more than once he referred to young Wolfgang as the miracle which God let be born in Salzburg. But he was undoubtedly a skillful teacher and a good composer too, even though he was destined to be overshadowed by his son. In fact, Leopold was quite prolific. And if he sacrificed his own career for his offspring, then he deserves to be heard once in a while. So here we go, and something I don't say very often on the Early Music Show, this is a trombone concerto.
Thank you.
Leopold Mozart's Concerto for Trombone and Orchestra, indeed, played there by Jurgen van Rieren with the Combattimento Consort Amsterdam, conducted by Jan Willem de Vriend. Well, we've come to the last piece in today's look at the music of Salzburg, and we end almost where we began. You remember those six little organ pieces written by the 11-year-old Weber while he was in Salzburg with his father? Well, his teacher there, as we heard earlier, was Michael Haydn, who settled in the city in 1762. He and his brother, the more famous Joseph, had been choir boys together at St. Stephen's Cathedral in Vienna, but their careers went in very different directions. Joseph ended up working for the Esterházy princes in Hungary, whilst Michael moved to Salzburg, working for over 43 years as cathedral kapellmeister. And when he wasn't doing that, he was director of concerts for the Grand Empress Maria Theresa. I think I would have preferred that side of the job myself. One of his duties for the great lady was as a sort of personal entertainments manager, to compose music for all the jolly events and parties she held at her Salzburg palace. Theatrical productions, music dramas, dances, operas and the rest. And who was Michael's assistant at the time? Well, none other than Leopold Mozart. Not that he was much of a fan of his boss. Apparently he regularly commented on Haydn's large intake of alcohol. Perhaps even worse, he declared that he had no genius for theatre music. Not very nice. Nevertheless, they kept the Empress happy enough. And it's a shame that so much of Michael Haydn's stage pieces have now disappeared into obscurity. So we'll end today's programme with one of his overtures, at least. It's from a production first performed in front of Her Imperial Majesty in Salzburg in 1771, a religious musical drama entitled The Repentant Sinner. Doesn't sound like a bundle of fun, does it? But the overture is delightful. Thank you.
Deutsche Kammerakademie Neuss, conducted by Johannes Goritzky, in that recording of the overture to Michael Haydn's 1771 Singspiel, Der Bußender Sünder, The Repentant Sünder. Sinner, I should say. And that ends today's edition of the Early Music Show, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Manchester by Les Pratt. Looking ahead to tomorrow's programme, Catherine Bott will be visiting the baritone Raymond Herrincks in Bath to mark the 200th anniversary of the death of Venanzio Rauzzini, who was Mozart's favourite castrato, who made his home in the city for more than 30 years at the end of the 18th century. Apparently, Rauzzini was incredibly good-looking and charming, in fact, quite a hit with the ladies, especially those of the nobility. And Raymond Herrincks, who's something of a Rauzzini expert, believes that Rauzzini's prowess in the bedroom might suggest that he wasn't actually a castrato at all, but a natural male soprano, rather like Rado Marian and Michael Maniacci, whose voices also both feature in the programme. So that's tomorrow's Early Music Show at the usual time, just after the 1 o'clock news.
All next week, Afternoon on Three celebrates the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra's visit to the 2010 St Magnus Festival in the Orkney Isles. And we begin on Monday with Elgar's magnificent Enigma Variations and an evocative seascape from Benjamin Britten, the four sea interludes from his opera Peter Grimes. Join me, Katie Derham, for a dazzling array of music, including Tchaikovsky, Schumann and Maxwell Davis, the Scottish Symphony Orchestra in Orkney. That's in Afternoon on Three, starting on Monday at 2 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, there goes Katie Derham, and here she comes again. Another chance to hear last Monday's lunchtime concert from Wigmore Hall in London, introduced by Katie.
Good afternoon and welcome to London's Wigmore Hall for a concert of love songs by Beethoven, Schubert, Dvorak and Strauss, sung by a young rising star of the opera world, Austrian soprano Genya Kühmeier, performing here today with Helmut Deutsch. No one seems more surprised by her success than Genya herself, who, having studied music and vocal teaching in her hometown of Salzburg, reluctantly entered the Mozart competition there in 2002 and won. An international career immediately beckoned, with the great and the good of the operatic world falling over themselves to recommend this young soprano, and critics around the globe gushing their praise. Musically breathtaking, effortlessly acrobatic, pointedly lyrical, and that was just one review. She's now appeared at the Met, at Covent Garden, at La Scala. Conductor Riccardo Muti is a particular fan. Her recordings include many of the Lieder by Schubert and Dvorak and Strauss that we'll be hearing today. Now, she has been due to perform here at Wigmore Hall 3 times in the past, but was thwarted by illness or, indeed, the imminent arrival of her 2 young children. The whole family is here today for what is, in fact, then, her Wigmore debut. And she told me earlier that she is full of positive tension. Not nerves, honestly. Helmut Deutsch, meanwhile, has surely played with them all. He's now in his 60s. He really is something of a legend, a Liedermeister. Ever since his award-winning student days in Vienna, he specialised in chamber music and playing for Lieder. And now, as well as being a professor at the Hochschule für Musik in Munich, he regularly gives masterclasses. He's played for Jonas Kaufmann, for Barbara Bonney, for Diana Damrau, Andreas Schmidt. The list goes on and on. Well, today then, here at Wigmore Hall, they've put together a varied programme, but with one big theme of love, romantic love and patriotic love. First, we'll be hearing 3 songs by Beethoven, the first 2 from his incidental music for Egmont, a play by Goethe. The overture, of course, a regular feature in the concert hall, but other music from the play is perhaps less familiar. Now, the subject of the play is the life and heroism of a 16th century Dutch nobleman, the Count of Egmont. Beethoven composed the music during the period of the Napoleonic Wars, at a time when the French Empire had extended its domination over most of Europe, and Beethoven used this piece to express his own rage at Napoleon by writing about this man, Egmont, who was prepared to stand up to his oppressors and bravely sacrifice himself for the love of his country. The 2 songs we're going to hear from Egmont today, though, are Die Trommel gerühret, as Egmont's love, Klärchen, watches her man ride off into battle. And then Freudvoll und Liedvoll, in which Klärchen, waiting at home, sings of love as the only force for true happiness. Genya will then sing a short lament, Klage, written for the funeral of Emperor Joseph II in 1790. Okay, technically not a love song, but very lovely nonetheless. Then Genya and Helmut will turn their attention to Schubert, 4 songs, including his first hit, Gretchen am Spinnrade, Gretchen at the Spinning Wheel, set to words by Goethe. It tells the tale of Gretchen, who gets so distracted by thoughts of Faust, and particularly of his kiss, that she forgets to keep on spinning. And the piano part cleverly depicts the rhythm of the spinning wheel, including the moment she forgets. The second of his songs we'll hear is a tragic piece called At the Grave of Anselm, one of many songs he wrote about the death of children. It seems to have been inspired by the death of his youngest half-brother, Theodore. Then, moving on to a rather lovely reflection on nighttime and dreams, and called appropriately Nacht und Träume, Night and Dreams. And then we have Die junge Nonne, The Young Nun, a rather complex song which tells the tale of a novice preparing to take her vows and putting all her earthly passions behind her. And you can hear the sound of a storm raging outside, which reminds the young nun of the worldly turmoil she's renouncing. But here they are, first performing those songs from Egmont, Jenny Kumeier and Helmut Deutsch.